Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, chat. Yes, we are being acknowledged by the looks of it.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to Slightly Something Else. I'm Yahtzee Croshaw, joined by Marty Sleaver.
Hello, everybody.
And we're talking about weird controls, or more specifically, weird controllers, because some people on Twitter seemed a bit confused. They were talking about tank controls in old PS1 games and the way you used to play Katamari Damacy with the two analog sticks.
Yeah.
But you wanted to talk about physical controllers, didn't you?
Yeah, I had the idea from two things. One, that Switch Sports came out, which is sort of the sequel to Wii Sports, but doesn't seem to be nearly as big as Wii Sports. And then the other thing is I got my Playdate, which is the little crank machine, and I've been cranking away with it.
Now, that's interesting. So, I have been interested to see what they do with that. In fact, I think I said before, I might be more interested in developing games for it than actually playing it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for folks to sort of start diving into the waters and make some really strange things for it. But yeah, got me thinking about sort of the long lineage of the highs and lows of bizarre plastic controllers and peripherals that we've had, throughout our time in games.
Well, let me just say that controllers used to be a lot more varied, especially before the invention of the PlayStation DualShock, which was sort of the template, the standard model for controllers going forward. Basically, everything since then has been based on that design. No bad thing, I say. You don't want to have to wrestle with a new piece of hardware every time you want to play a new game. And I'm, of course, old enough to remember the sort of peak of the Guitar Hero Wii era when everyone's play spaces was cluttering up with a load of plastic bullshit.
And yeah, it definitely felt like a bubble burst around then.
Honestly, I'm not terribly keen to go back to that time.
Yeah. But do you have like going back to like when you were growing up, like do you have like were you just like, well, I'm gonna play with whatever the standard controller is, or did you ever dabble in some of the weirder stuff in the games that required the different weird things?
Never really in the arcade space. But that was always a pretty fascinating thing to go play one of them flight simulators or your Space Harrier with the whole fully moving chair.
Yeah.
I guess my point is that sort of thing does work pretty well in an arcade sector, but in the public sector, people don't want to have to unplug and plug new stuff in for every new thing. Much as one can create a very unique experience with a unique controller.
Yeah, absolutely. And it could, I get what you're saying there, because it could feel like those, a lot of those sort of arcade experiences were, I guess, gimmicky, for lack of a better word, and that's fine in like a small amount, but if you're paying, $50 or, in the case of a lot of these things, way more than the price of a regular game on them, like, are you really going to want to stick with it for 5, 10, 20, 40 hours?
It's sort of bespoke immersion. You can craft a controller specifically for getting the most out of one specific game rather than, just defaulting to the thing that everyone's just muscle memoried all up on. So they can just play without thinking about too much.
Absolutely.
You know what I've always liked as a concept was the old Steel Battalion thing.
Yeah, that's what we had in our art right at the top of the page. So that's I know in my mind that's one of the, if you tried to say like what's a weird controller, that's probably the first thing that comes to mind.
They used to sell these massive control banks covered in like superfluous buttons. So you could have to reach over and pull levers and press like 5 buttons to activate all the missile banks or whatever. And I think that spoke to something very instinctual in the mind of, like, it brings out that little boy instinct of wanting to be a train driver or a forklift operator, someone in control of a big piece of machinery.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because that's, that was supposed to replicate the cockpit of the mech you were in. And it had, I think it was like $200-$250 or something, only worked at the Steel Battalion games. The thing I remember vividly is that it had this like eject button. And if you were about to lose, you needed to hit the eject button, because if you blew up with you still inside your mech, it would literally erase your save. So it like brought like a sense of urgency of where you would need to like lift the little cap.
Yeah, yeah.
And then hit the eject button.
Had the little plastic cover on it. That was the best part.
Yeah, which is like, that's the most like anime bullshit ever, which I really, really love.
Did you know there was a Steel Battalion for Kinect?
There was, yeah, and I heard it was like legitimately one of the worst Steel Battalion games, one of the worst Kinect games. Yeah,
it was absolute dog shit, was basically everything they tried to do on the Kinect that was supposed to be more about core gaming than just gimmicky party fun.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know a fun fact? You know who developed that Kinect Steel Battalion game?
Someone who should have known better and should have been sent to bed without supper.
From Software.
Who?
From Software.
Well,
yeah,
what do
FromSoft
you know?
Developed it. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
I do not think that was any of probably the human beings who were working on the Souls games at the time, because I believe it was after Dark Souls 1, before Dark Souls 2.
Never meet your heroes, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, there's something very cathartic about just having a big, solid machine to press buttons on. You know, when you used to go to a science museum when you were a kid, press all the buttons.
Yeah.
We like tactile button sensation. That's why the Kinect thing didn't work. You're supposed to sort of press virtual buttons and lean forward and pull the lever that isn't there.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the thing. It's like, as much as we were like, we don't want to fill our room with a bunch of chunky plastic things, like the chunky plasticness was sort of the thing that gave us that, you know, tactile enjoyment, and that's something that like Kinect tried to, it was just never, you know, never advanced enough to sort of replicate the whole Minority Report thing of you know, swiping through pages and everything and saying enhance and I don't know. Was there ever a Kinect thing that you enjoyed?
No. I think the tactile feedback of pressing buttons is an important part of the gaming experience.
Yeah.
I liked playing Guitar Hero back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
I have fond memories of when I was a kid playing Commodore and Amiga games with a one-button joystick.
Mm-hmm.
And playing a game that was about, you know, flying around and avoiding obstacles, and I would literally instinctively move my entire body to pull the joystick.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Of course, having one button and presented its own problems.
Yeah.
Like, there were Commodore 64 games where they had this very exotic selection of things that you could do just by holding down a button and pressing in a direction, because that was all you could do. So to change weapons, you have to hold down a button and press down to open the menu and press it left and right.
That's like an example of like design by limitation that we talk about a lot. How, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, Steel Battalion, the complete opposite of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was clearly like for the like real like enthusiast fans, like the people who had like money to burn in their pockets and were like, finally my I can create my cockpit at home. It's the same thing with you know, there are steering wheels. There's still people who build like little race car cockpits for stuff like that.
Steering wheel controllers. Have you ever indulged in a steering wheel controller?
I had one early on for the N64 of all consoles, and I remember it worked with like Cruisin' USA and Beetle Adventure Racing and Mario Kart, but it was like, why would I think I got it as a gift from like a sort of like an uncle, and so it was one of those things where it was very cool in theory, but in actuality, like, there's no way anyone could play Mario Kart well. I rephrase that. I'm sure like someone's beaten Dark Souls with a steering wheel, but there was no way I could play Mario Kart well with that sort of setup.
Someone's beaten Dark Souls with a Guitar Hero controller as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny, the early for growing up, the company I associate most with the weird peripheral stuff was Nintendo. You know, obviously starting out with the NES, like originated with the Zapper, so you had your you had your little light gun with Duck Hunt and everything.
Light guns, steering wheels, these are easier to justify because there are many driving games and many shooting games in the world.
Yeah, but then you get to the weirder things, like I feel like we talked about it in the last couple of weeks, the Power Glove, you know, which they kind of used as backdoor advertised it in
That was supposed to be a universal controller, though, wasn't it? Not just for one specific game.
Yeah, but they only ended up making it. There were two specific games that were sort of like glove games, and then you were in theory able to use it on anything, but it was just incredibly cumbersome to use on, you know, Mario or Zelda or Metroid or Mega Man or anything like that.
Yeah, there's a reason why the smartwatch has never really taken off hugely. Because you can only use one hand to press the buttons. That's true. And also you can't really use your thumbs.
Yeah. So I guess the only thing you can do is something incredibly simple at that point. It can't really, you know, break the mold at all. That is interesting.
I always wonder what the potential was in the Guitar Hero controller, as if you could do stuff other than guitar games. I mean, obviously, pretty much every game would be about playing a guitar, but you could do that in different contexts. Like, what if you had a guitar game where you were driving around in a van and you press the buttons on the left and right to steer left and right and use the fret board or whatever it is to accelerate or reverse?
Yeah.
And then you could use that to drive around and then play a show after you've driven there.
So you're in your mind, is this a world where, like, does the control method exist in the world of the fiction of this game? Like, if you would get into a car in that game, would the steering wheel look like a guitar? So you'd be like replicating how this person is driving?
I picture a third person game where you're someone standing on the roof of a van holding a guitar, and you basically drive up to like crowds of bored looking people. And then instantly switch to playing along with the background music. And then, like,
okay, I like that.
Once you've lit up that specific town of bored people, you just, you know, at the touch of a button, switch back to drivey mode, and away you go to leave nothing but unwanted pregnancies and scattered beer bottles.
See, I feel like we both played last year The Artful Escape, right? How would that game have done with an actual guitar? Because the platforming was very simple, so it could have easily been done with, like, a directional pad and a single jump. But then once you got to the actual guitar sections, I feel like having the guitar in your hand would have really, really created a connection there.
Yeah, especially if they'd actually had you do some like rhythm gameplay and not just repeat the notes back to the game like it's Simon.
Yeah. Like a very, very simplistic version of Simon. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do still like the plot of that game, but yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah, and I like the acting, I like the art, but it felt like the worst part was the playing, which isn't great in terms of games.
Of course, the other thing games that go for weird controls can do is take technology most people already have and find new things to do with it. Mm-hmm. The longest time people have tried to do voice controls in games with varying, I'd say, usually low degrees of success. And recently we had the very innovative Before Your Eyes, which is a concept that I don't think anyone else could possibly do, in which you controlled the game literally by blinking.
Yeah, which was, fascinating. That was the one of those rare times where it was a first I've ever seen in a game.
It's a good game. Again, I think the story carries it because there is no gameplay. It's just the story continues every time you blink.
Yeah.
So you end up with these situations where you want to stay in a moment to get more exposition for what's going on and who you are, but then you accidentally blink and you are forced to move on. It's a game about the fleetingness of life.
Yeah, and I think the mechanic really like works well with the theme. And it's interesting. We had the creators on Design Delve a few months ago, and they mentioned they're working on their next project. They haven't said what it is, but they said they are still exploring the sort of a further depth they could take that control method with. So I'd be interested to see how that's evolved. But I felt like Before Your Eyes it worked better than any of the voice command games I played. And I've played a weird amount of them. Seaman and Hey You Pikachu.
I don't think those have ever worked very well. There's just too many factors in, you know, trying to understand what a person is saying.
And yeah,
activate things accordingly because, of course, everyone's got different dialects. Everyone's different like levels of tone and pitch. I used to have the biggest problem back in Australia whenever I tried to play like Brain Training on someone else's DS. I can only assume they were keyed for like Australian accents because it could never understand what the fuck I was saying. I'd say black. Did you say yellow? No.
Yeah.
I
think people like min-max brain training by like realizing that there were certain like monosyllabic like grunts you could make, and it would be like, oh, okay, now the game knows you mean black by going or yellow is wuh. Yeah.
Do you remember Rise, Son of Rome? Xbox One launch title. That tried force commands.
Where you'd like, wouldn't you shout out for like the archers behind you to fire?
Yeah. Part of the reason why it doesn't work is because having to do that sort of immediately takes you out of the game. Because you have you're not listening to your own voice. Mm-hmm. You want to hear like the main character's voice so that you can, you can go, yes, we are in that world. But when you say it, then the main character repeats it, that creates a distance. Especially when I'm like calling out the commands in my nerdy voice. My nerdy voice in my little flat. But
I feel like the voice command game that it didn't work well, but the one that like interested, that was like the most interesting to me, and it wasn't like Seaman was a real like sort of like a one-off thing and everything, but I thought that Lifeline game for PS2 where you literally played as the person looking through cameras and speaking to the character on screen.
Oh yeah, I know that.
Like you were trying to give them information and help that avatar get out of the room and get out of the compound. I believe it's called Lifeline.
Yeah. What was that game that did something like that? Republic.
Oh yeah, that's right. Where you were all like hacking into the cameras and everything.
You were looking through the cameras to help someone escape through an environment. An interesting game that.
Yeah. Sort of. Thankfully, you didn't have to talk to Republic.
Sort of fell apart in the last episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, but I think still worth playing. But yeah, that was. I feel like that was the most useful or the most interesting, I guess, voice command stuff. And I'm curious to see if someone's able to do something that works as well as Before Your Eyes did for me. But I feel like you'd have to almost. Like Before Your Eyes was very simple, so I feel like you'd have to really kind of pare it down there.
And even it tended to bugger up a bit for me. But then, my office was probably a bit gloomy. And my webcam isn't very high res. You might have noticed.
Yeah, and we have glasses. There's a lot of hurdles to get over there. Yeah,
I tended to register like just eye movements as blinks.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what other game you could control by blinking. And the only thing that springs to mind is a game where you play as a Buckingham Palace guard. And it's like, so it's like something like Papers, Please or something.
Where
you just have to make sure you don't blink whenever there's a tourist in front of you taking pictures, and they're all like using their flashes and they're being obnoxious.
Yeah.
But if you blink, gosh, you're in trouble.
Yeah. I can imagine in that same respect a horror game doing a similar thing, like a simplistic horror game, something like PT, where it would have had a blinking mechanic,
You know what I always thought was a nice mechanic, that was a nice like one-off gimmick mechanic, was something Until Dawn did, was where if the character was like trying to hide from a monster, all you had to do was just not move the controller at all, because it was using the PlayStation 6 axis technology. You just had to hold perfectly still.
Perfectly still, or else. Yeah.
And if you made the slightest movement, it would register and alert the monster.
Yeah.
That was tense. That was genuinely tense, those moments.
I feel like that's a more interesting use of six axis than pretty much anything else. Like, I always hated, like, Uncharted when you'd have to, like, balance to walk across, like, a log, across a river, like that. Yeah.
And those fucking David Cage games where...
Where
he had to, like, thrust the controller downwards to indicate that we're chopping our finger off or something.
Yeah, and like it would work only like 50% of the time, and so you'd completely just be pulled out of the action.
I'd usually be like slouched on the settee playing the game, and obviously I couldn't move the controller down anymore because
it was just on your body.
It was just on my body, so I'd have to get up and go, oh, bloody hell. And for me, that's sort of the issue with the complex, big, silly controller, is that the reason why the DualShock layout works so well is that we can just get immersed and not think about it.
Yeah.
The hypothetical zenith of game control is just direct neural interface. You just think a thing, and it does it on the screen. I think if you oblige the player to do some exercise, then that sort of instantly takes them out of the game. That's why the motion controls never really worked for me.
No, like, and it is, everyone did try, you know, after the massive success of the Wii, you had Kinect and you had PlayStation Move. And so
I think it works better in VR because you are totally immersed.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, VR has never managed to get a two-handed gun to work for me.
No. Like, what's the, I mean, is Half-Life Alyx probably the high watermark in terms of VR controls?
Yeah, and you'll note there's no two-handed guns in it. Because Valve are smart people, and they figured out it just doesn't work when your hands are like free-floating in midair.
Yeah.
Pistols, I mean, like gun fingers, that works great. I love like dual wielding and shit like Boneworks. It's going, hoppa, 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 hoppa. And then like a really cool, put the guns back in the holsters in a really cool way.
Would the two-handed gun work if you had a piece of plastic to hold in real life?
I've proposed in a Zero Punctuation once that you could have like controllers that clipped together. And then you can hold it like it's like a submachine gun or something.
Yeah, because you wouldn't need anything fancy. You would just need like the fake ass plastic gun from like Big Buck Hunter or something. As long as it just felt tactile like that, then it would be fine.
You just need the hand controllers VR's already got, and then just connect them with a stick.
Yeah,
that's all you need.
Yeah,
maybe some kind of mechanism so you can do the shotgun pump action. Oh, that would be cool, wouldn't it? Being able to hold an actual physical thing that pumps like a shotgun.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like, you know, arcade games have been doing that since the 90s, so replicating that at home. I think the problem would be, though, is if you're in VR, would you have to be holding that the entire game? Like,
well, that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, there are going to be bits where you put the gun away or switch to a pistol. Yeah.
See, they could make a Halo game, and that's the reason Master Chief can only carry two weapons at a time, because like you would only be able to carry physically as many weapons as you have on your own mushy body. So there you go. I was looking through the history of some of the weirder controllers, like stuff I'd never used but never even heard of. Nintendo had a lot of weird ones, especially they had things that worked on the Game Boy that were really weird. They had in Japan a sewing machine that connected to your Game Boy Color, and it had to be a very specific sewing machine, but you were able to choose on the game, and it was an official Mario game, the character you wanted, and then the sewing machine would sew that little like emblem on whatever piece of clothing was on there, which I just found like, who thought this was a good idea? Someone spent like probably several years on this. Like, why was this the thing?
Well, for the longest time, people were still experimenting with what people actually wanted from video games.
Yeah, that is true. At that same period of time, they had a fishing sonar sensor that you would click onto your Game Boy, and it was to be used in actual fishing. So you'd pull your Game Boy out when you were on a boat, and it had like a very like mild sonar thing, and you'd kind of hold it parallel to the water, and it would show you that, in theory, that there's a fish like 10 feet in front of you.
So it was the original like iPhone app.
I guess so, yeah. I guess I feel like a lot of these controllers, like amongst everything that iPhones have taken and thrown into a single device, they've done the same there. So, and then of course, I think we've brought it up before, but that Boktai game, the Kojima game that had the sun sensor and which that was interesting because it sort of encouraged you to think about the game in a different way, even though it wasn't, you know, entirely successful.
A bit of spit went down the wrong pipe there.
Oh no, that's not good. You got so excited because we were talking about Boktai.
Yeah,
that happens.
I produce a lot of spit.
That's
So I'm genuinely curious what games you can play on the Playdate right now.
It is incredibly simplistic at the moment. Expect the one that I've had the most fun with is a fishing game, because that feels like that's the crankiest thing available. And it does remind me of like the Dreamcast had a fishing controller for
Sega Bass Fishing, I think it was.
Yeah. The thing is, it has like there's nice almost less like less gamey games, I guess, and more of like little like kind of cube things. There's like, you know, you're cranking things and you're seeing all sorts of like meters go up. Almost looks like on a thing that you're trying to like, you know, create like a Frankenstein's monster kind of thing. There's a surfing game where you're cranking in order to like gain the momentum you want on the wave to stand up. But it's all, again, all very simplistic. There's like a bird watching game, like a weird little time travel thing where you're replicating the time machine using the crank. And it's,
you know, I was thinking about Steel Battalion. I was like, if you made like a steampunk version of Steel Battalion, a crank would be a nice addition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crank, little handlebar. But a crank by itself, I guess, functionally it's not that much different to a scroll wheel in the world of interface controllers. Just like a big...
No.
Imagine like if you were using Microsoft Excel, and instead of a scroll wheel, you just had a big crank on the side of your desk. I think that'd be more fun. Yeah. I think it'd be a lot more fun to work in an office if you had that. Type, and then you had to lean over and go. And it was a really like heavy one that made clicking sounds.
Yeah.
Next column of figures.
I feel like you're just describing like working in an office in that movie Brazil. It's like a nice little dystopian office.
I used to work data entry. I think I'd look forward to getting to the end of a column of figures if I could turn the big clicky wheel again.
Yeah, I am really excited. Like, despite the fact that they have a lot of cool indie devs working on, like Lucas Pope is working on a game just for Playdate, the Return of the Obra Dinn guy. So I'd be curious. I don't know if it's going to be like a Papers, Please, but you're just cranking.
I guess if I was tasked with making a game around it, my thought goes to factory conveyor belts.
Okay.
Like, you know, a factory conveyor belt, and your job was like something like that old Lucasfilm game Night Shift, where you had to make sure all the toys were perfect.
I can see that, because the crank can work in both directions. One thing it doesn't have is there's no like haptic feedback on it, so it can't make the cranking harder, like more difficult.
Does it at least make clicking noises as you turn?
It does make very nice noises. Like the noises are rattle. Yeah.
Well, that's what I want.
Yeah, that is doing exactly what we need. So I don't know. That'll be I'll be interested to see what, especially like what just Normos end up doing, because it's very open source. So I'm hopefully Normos. Hopefully Muggles start making something pretty neat for it. Yeah. It also got me thinking, going down the rabbit hole of peripherals, got me thinking about the few things that have come with Rez, like the, you remember the old Mizuguchi game, Rez, like the shooting game. The first one was the Trance Vibrator, which
with a sex toy.
Came with a sex toy. It wasn't meant to be a sex toy, but very quickly everyone was like, well, this is clearly just a sex toy.
Yeah, people were sticking Wiimotes up their vaginas day one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's like rule. What is that? Like rule 57, we'll say.
That's why they had to bring out those rubber condoms for them.
Yeah. That couldn't have been why.
I'm pretty sure it was why.
And I did, Andrew Hickenbottom mentioned, I think I've said this on a podcast before, but I did, when I played Rez VR at GDC, I got to play it in the full Rez suit. And it was a vibro suit, so it was an entire suit I put on, like a race car driver suit that had like a whatever couple dozen different vibro points.
Febreze around that in between. Yeah, users, that was like game journalists.
It's fine. That was pre-pandemic. There were no germs back then. That was like 2016. That was before germs.
Germs are only one of the problems. You have to spend the rest of the day smelling like every game journalist there.
Mm-hmm. It was great. It was just Axe body spray and failed ambition. So it was great.
That is not a pleasant smell.
No. And then, the Wii era is the other era that I always think of with they went sort of peripheral crazy with the Lynx crossbow training and stuff like that.
The intention was to make the sort of universal controller, just the stick, and then that could theoretically be used by the power of the imagination to be a sword or a cricket bat or whatever you like. And then, of course, they brought out a load of plastic things you could slot it into to help, you know, sell the illusion.
The most horrifying one was Babysitter Mama. So it was a spinoff of the Cooking Mama games. Taking care of a baby. And they'd
slot the controller into a big plastic baby.
And it was in plastic. It was like a stuffed animal.
And it was a stuffed trying baby. To burp it and stuff.
Yep, it was a stuffed baby, and you'd put the controller like in the back, like a sheath, And then, yeah, you'd have to like, cradle baby. It. And you wouldn't, you like, if you shake it, that was bad. You don't shake the baby. That's apparently bad for babies. So, yes. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I can't fathom who's playing this game. I feel like if an adult goes in, like, if one of us would go in to buy that thing, they would put us on a list. Like, a government list. And I would perfectly be fine with that, honestly. Well,
that was the Japanese industry, I assume. Because that's, you know.
Yeah, I think it came out in the West.
The Japanese industry has always been about exploring the different demographics to play games. That's why there's so many, like, weird dating sims and sewing machines.
Yeah,
and shit like that.
Yeah.
Was there any more specific points you wanted to raise before we go to Super Chats?
It also got me thinking about there's a handful of weird controllers that didn't change how you played the game, but the controllers just looked weird. And the two that came to mind were, for PS1, they had a Wu-Tang controller, and it was just a functional PS1 controller, but in the shape of the Wu-Tang W. And then the other one was the infamous Resident Evil 4 controller, which just looks like a giant bloody chainsaw. And I think even has, like, you can, like, pull the cord and it makes a noise, but it doesn't change how you control Resident Evil 4 whatsoever.
And then you could use it to play Animal Crossing.
Exactly, yeah, with your bloody chainsaw. No, I'm just trying to chop down a tree. I'm not trying to kill Tom Nook and get my money back. Scavenger also brought up the Onimusha controller. I forgot, Onimusha 3 had katana controllers. On PS2, you could play Onimusha 3 with two katanas. And again, no movement or anything. It was just the buttons on the katanas, which is very strange.
Yeah, I gotta think that's more cool in concept than in application, because after a while, you just get immersed and you don't really care.
Yeah. They also, I remember Square for the special edition of Final Fantasy X-2, which was like the sort of the Spice Girls spinoff to Final Fantasy X. The special edition came with the two controllers, and it was replicas of the main character's two pistols. And they were like really heavy. They were like, they had like the weight of guns. But again, you didn't do any like pointing at the screen and shooting. It just replicated the analog sticks and the buttons. So I expect you to play like a 50-hour RPG holding these two like 10-pound guns. Very strange.
That was a weird game.
Yeah.
Wasn't that aimed at women, that game? Because, you know, the whole, like, all the main characters were women, and there was a whole mechanic based around changing the dress you wore.
Yeah, it was like very much the class system. The job system was outfit based, and so it was. It's actually, I don't know, it was pretty good. Like, despite being a very strange offshoot,
glad it was modeled on the guns and not her boobies.
Yeah, that is nice. Good for you, Square. Look at that. We apologize all the bad stuff we said about you a few weeks ago, Square.
What was that Japanese arcade game that was controlled by a huge plastic pair of buttocks? You had to ram your fingers between the buttocks in imitation of a popular Japanese school prank where you try to stick your fingers up teachers' buttholes.
Watazami Otaku, what was that game called? Doki Doki Ass Slapper? I just assumed Doki Doki was in there, because that sounds like something that would be at the beginning of the
Doki
name
Doki
of the game.
Is Japanese onomatopoeia for a pounding heartbeat.
Okay, so I feel like Doki Doki Ass Slapper would be a good name for that game.
I think it was called something like Boonga Boonga.
Which reminds me, one game we didn't talk about was Donkey Konga. Did you ever play game?
No.
Yeah, Donkey Konga and Jungle Beat.
Yeah, with the bongos.
Yeah, and they had the one rhythm game, and then they had another one that was like a pretty interesting platformer that you used the bongos for.
Was it just like using them as two buttons, or did you actually have to like play the bongos to jump?
Yeah, you'd kind of use it like you tap the right one in order to run, or tap right and left to run like that, but then to attack you'd kind of hit both of them, and be certain things where you needed to do a special attack and like really pound them in unison, and then certain things that you had to do like to jump, I think you would hit both of them at the same time. I think it could register like an off bongo clap.
Ooh, sounds too much like exercise to me.
It does. It started getting dangerously close to the exercise world, which we don't need any of here.
Super chat time,
I guess.
Hey, it's Kaylee
Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I was just reminiscing about things podcast, but that's fine.
Yeah, I think it was less of a point and more of just the trip down memory lane. But I did like the fact that everyone in chat was talking about their favorites. So I think I always think that's nice.
That's valid.
Yeah.
So Jumbly Wobbly gives 6,600 CRCs and says, "Must I remind you of your own ZP of Too Human?" That's $10 American, by the way. And what did I say in my ZP of Too Human, Jumbly Wobbly? Was that where I was complaining about how they were using the right analog stick for something other than camera control?
Oh, right. Yeah, that did have, like, combat was, like, all relegated to the right analog stick, right?
I hate when games do that. The right analog stick is for the camera in 3D games. Do not mess with that. It never ends well.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Where are we? Monetization. Super. La, 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 la. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I was at the top.
Perfect.
Okay. Dave DeBlanc gave us $5 and says, "Arcade machines originally had pretty wacky controllers. We need to bring those back." Have you been to an arcade lately, Dave DeBlanc? I haven't. I assume they're still full of weird machines.
Unless they're all just replicas of the iPhone games, like we were talking about before, which is very sad.
But you know what? If I could play Doodle Jump with a big rattly crank, I'd probably enjoy that as well.
Oh, yeah. Or like Angry Birds, where you're cranking almost setting up like a trebuchet. Yeah, give me a good trebuchet game with a nice crank.
Yeah, where you tighten up the string with the crank.
Yeah.
Although you'd need to add a mechanic to sort of make the crank resist you more, the more tight it got.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's not what the playdate does.
No. Maybe multiplayer cranking could work. A couple people just hanging out, cranking out, a couple buds on a Friday night.
It should work
doing
with
some
the,
cranks.
Works with people who made the PS5 controller.
There you go.
Make it harder to pull things.
I do like, do you like the haptic feedback stuff?
No,
this one?
Not really.
Did you like any of this? Oh, God.
I don't really like it when I have to like pull harder on the triggers to do something. I feel like, again, that sort of takes me out of things.
Did you like any of the stuff in the Astro's Playroom?
Well, I can't remember much, so I guess not.
Okay. I did. I thought it was it was neat. Not necessarily good, but neat.
All right, then.
Mm-hmm.
Which in many ways is worse than bad, because it's forgettable.
That's true.
Jumbly Wobbly again gives 1,000 CRC and
Thank
says,
so
one word, accessibility. Oh, that's
which
you gotta be careful.
Xbox has been great with that, with the Xbox Adaptive Controller, which is very modular in terms of how you want to use controller inputs.
You got to be careful about alienating people. How would, for example, someone with only one arm use a playdate?
Great point. It would be nearly impossible, I would say. Just even like motor skill problems, but Microsoft has been incredible. Like, if you've ever seen here, I'll throw a link to it in the chat here. The Xbox Adaptive Controller is really fascinating. Like, in the amount, like how modular it is in terms of design, and how much it's opened the world to folks who aren't able to play games in traditional two stick controller methods, like most of us are. Pretty great stuff.
Andrew Hickabottom gives £3 and says, JogCon, NegCon, Menacer, DJ Hero Controller. Of those, the DJ Hero Controller is the only one I remember. They have those little turntables.
Same. Are the rest of those real? JogCon? Yeah, JogCon sure is real. It's it was for Ridge Racer on the PS1, and it has... So it's a PS1 controller, but in the center is a wheel. So it's like a very small steering wheel, but you would only be able to control it with one hand. So you'd be steering it like that. I'm confused. I'm curious of what the Menacer is, because that sounds bad. That sounds like something I don't want in my house.
I was just reminding myself of the Atari Jaguar controller, which was basically a Sega Genesis controller with a pocket calculator glued to it.
Yes, that is pretty much true, yeah. The Menacer was a light gun for Sega Genesis. So it was like the Sega's version of the Super Scope 6 for the Super
That's
Nintendo.
That's not a very nice name. That sounds like something, you know, that you'd accuse a police officer of doing.
Of being a menacer? Yeah. That's like a very, that's a very early 90s, like, Sega does what Nintendo don't.
He menaced me. I feel thoroughly menaced. what was the other one? Negcon.
Negcon. Ooh, I am very worried to Google this. Andrew, do not.
I'm looking it up now.
Do not put me on a list. Ooh, this is weird. It's like a controller that has a...
That splits apart, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Very strange. By a swivel joint, allowing the player to twist the halves relative to each other. Well, that sounds pretty interesting, actually. Sort of part of the way towards being what the Playdate does with the little turny crank.
Yeah, but I'd be curious what... would you use that as like a throttle? Like, I just don't know. I can't imagine any PS1 game was built with that in mind.
A game about attaching bolts to things. You put the bolt in the thing, and then you turn the controller to secure the bolt.
Okay. What if in It Takes Two, every time it changed the controller method, you had to pick up an entirely new device? So it came packed in with like 55 different little plastic things.
Well, that sounds logistically difficult.
Just a bit, yeah.
Chris Cook, who's been a member for 6 months in Early Access, says, anyone remember the Steam controller?
That is a great question, because I forget about it very often.
I never have used one.
I used the one in my old office. I never owned one. I don't know, I'm curious if anyone in chat had good experiences with it, but I just never saw the... Like, it was supposed to be able to, like, oh, you can hang out on the couch and play real-time strategy games, but those aren't games that people want to play while lounging on the couch, I feel like.
No, they want to be leaning urgently forward, imagining their general pattern.
Yeah. Jumbly said Jack liked it when he tried it, so.
Oh, okay.
Classic Jack.
And Lord Reffer says that they have a Steam controller. It was good, but had issues. Steam Deck fixed almost all of them.
That is true. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I guess, the Steam Deck does have the little, like, imaginary the mouse pad thing, like touchpad that kind of acts as the mouse pad.
Yeah. Like, I never really liked that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's any better on the Steam Deck than it was however many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago on the Steam controller.
Leonard Psychobike gives 20 euros and says, a few weeks back I had to defend my thesis. It was a financial analysis of the British games industry. For good luck, I wore my ZP t-shirt under my suit, and it worked. I was top of my class. Here's to you, Saint Yahtzee. Thank you. I take full credit for that.
Yeah, I feel like I had much less to do with the hard work Leonard put in and more the power of you channeled through the shirt.
Well, people don't really know that every single zero punctuation piece of merchandise is infused with my essence.
Mm, I thought you were going to say it's like hand-stitched by you.
You know how Kiss published a comic book in the 80s that they promised was published in real Kiss blood?
In blood, yeah.
And they genuinely went to like the printing press and like released a couple of drops. That's what I did, but with spunk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, so, wow. Speaking of semen.
So that's how you know every t-shirt contains a little part of me.
Oh, no.
Of course, t-shirt manufacturers very swiftly asked me to leave.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, they didn't actually invite you to do that, part is, yeah.
No, I had to go in disguise, but it was worth it for the fans.
Yeah, exactly.
John Connor gives $5 Canadian, says Rocksmith has an interesting use a real guitar as a controller method. Also, any tips for someone stuck in Obradin? Get good, scrub. Well, Rocksmith's whole gimmick was that it actually taught you to play actual guitar, in contrast to Guitar Hero controllers.
Yeah, and I've heard from some people who actually learned guitar via Rocksmith, which I think is really cool. I think any video game that can actually teach you a thing is pretty neat, because God knows, Guitar Hero doesn't help you play real guitar whatsoever. So
no, the Rock Band drum set might get you started on learning the drums. Because
I was so bad at the drums. I was so bad at the drums.
Rhythm can be confusing. It's like patting your head. I just don't think I have any.
Can't do that. I can barely do one of those at the same time, let alone both.
I always boggle at people who can like play the like on piano, like the ostinato with one hand and the melody with the other hand.
Uh-huh.
Seems like you'd need some kind of computer brain.
Yes, absolutely.
Gene Venter gives $20 Canadian. Says, "Hey Yahtzee, how goes the writing on Starstruck Vagabond? Love it so far, and I'm hungry for more. Still working on the story campaign. Still making sure to do a bit of work every day. It's coming along. I'm working on getting like the critical path done, and then as I'm doing it, a lot of things have occurred to me about the gameplay to fix.
And now you just." You want to pivot and make it a purely crank-based game, right?
Probably wouldn't work, thinking about it.
No.
After I've done the critical path, I need to work on all like the individual character stories, which could be like Persona style. You build up your relationship with them, and then they'll get their cutscene.
So are you literally just doing the writing now? Like, you're writing in like a Word doc, or are you like...
No,
I don't know what you're using to make it.
I'm programming all the cutscenes on the fly, as it were.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Pixel Grip, member for 25 months, has a member chat to say, "While I've never used or owned it, I'm fascinated by the RE4 chainsaw controller. Thanks for the content, guys. Glad I could join live for once."
Yeah, and apparently, they released one for the GameCube, which is where RE4 originally released, and then a few years later released one for the PS2 when it got ported over there. And apparently the PS2 one is much like neater and scarier looking as a chainsaw than the GameCube one, which makes sense, because I feel like the GameCube is like a cute little suitcase. You don't want a big old scary bloody chainsaw dripping on that.
That Resident Evil 4 was supposed to be like the hot app for the GameCube, but it was just one PS2 kick to the GameCube's balls after another.
Yep.
They announced the PS2 version before the GameCube version was even out. The PS2 version was cheaper.
Yeah, I think it had like some bonus, some of the bonus content, mercenary stuff or whatever.
Nicer
yeah.
chainsaw controller. Eat shit, GameCube, Capcom said.
Yep.
We signed a deal to make games for the GameCube, but you didn't say anything about making them not suck. I did a video on the Capcom 5 once. What lovely story, that.
Yeah.
I always thought it was weird that the Capcom 5 consisted of like two or three of some of the like the most memorable games of the time, and two complete non-starter piles of shit.
Yep.
There was no middle ground at all.
No. I like it. Go big or go home. Big swings.
There you go.
Give me Killer 7 or give me Piano 3.
Piano 3, whatever the fuck that was.
Yeah.
Blaze MD gives 20 Egyptian somethings. Starts with a P, possibly. It says, "Check, test, super chats now work in Egypt."
Oh, that's cool.
I beg your pardon, I missed one out there. Scavenger gives $10 to say, "I think some gimmicks later develop into great tech. Dreamcast had a controller screen before the Wii U, and Nintendo let you use a GBA as a controller on the GameCube, then we later got the Switch." I think it was more the Wiimote thing that led to the Switch. I think the GBA and GameCube thing was more about the sort of inter-system thing, where you could plug the Game Boy in to do extra things in certain games. Like, if you had a Game Boy Advance copy of one of the Zelda games on there, you could plug that into Zelda Wind Waker. And...
yeah. And you had certain games like Four Swords and the Pac-Man game that sort of required the GBA. It was interesting, because that was a time where Nintendo was trying to bridge the gap between their parallel handheld and home console markets. And then with, like, the Wii... then the DS, those like rarely ever spoke to each other. And then the Wii U felt like a half measure, and then finally with Switch they just converged, and I can't imagine that we'll be getting like a, you know, they won't be splitting that anytime soon, seeing as how how profitable the Switch is for them.
The Dreamcast didn't really have a controller screen. Well, it had a screen in the controller, but it wasn't used as a controller. Well, it just displayed stuff.
The screen was in the memory card, the VMU. So the controller just had like a blank space for you to click the memory card into the top of it. And then the memory card had a little digital screen that in some games read out information. Mm. And then other things like Sonic Adventure, you could have your Chao Garden. So you could take the thing out and had little controllers on it. And you could help raise your little critters. And then when you plug it back in, your critters are more powerful in the game.
That sounds difficult to emulate later.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Will Cooling gives £2 and says, I really miss light gun games. They need to come back. Are there contemporary light gun games at the moment?
Released the House of the Dead remake.
Oh, yeah. On the Switch.
But I think. I don't know how that control. I assume you just point your Joy-Con at the screen. Like, I don't think maybe there's like a gun peripheral or something, but I guess light gun games are probably that's what VR is now. Like, a lot of the games we mentioned are just like really fancy light gun games. I had for PS1 a game called Point Blank that was like a collection of almost like carnival light gun games, but a neat sort of charming overall aesthetic to them.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay, confused for a second there, but this is a person whose actual name is Windows Task Manager, who's been a member for 25 months. Surprised I haven't seen him before if he's been a member that long. Who says, does the Virtual Boy count as a controller? Well, it had a controller.
Yeah.
The weird thing about the Virtual Boy was that it had no head tracking, so you just had to it was sort of mounted to the desk.
Yeah.
You had to like lean into it.
Yeah. And you would you'd hurt your neck after playing for like 20 minutes, and then you'd get eye strain. It is like one of the most uncomfortable gaming experiences ever.
Yeah.
I don't know if I wouldn't call that a unique controller, because its controller was pretty simple and like par for the course at the time. But the whole thing was, was.
Yes. I'm looking at the Virtual Boy controller now. It's sort of somewhere on the way to being the N64 controller, but with boobs.
Because it was after after Super Nintendo, but before N64, so it did feel like it was sort of on its way to what the PS1 and N64 would do, but with boobs. There you go.
It looks like the controller has boobs.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
If you Google that,
or just Google boob.
If I'd move this browser over your face, everyone can see what I'm talking about. Look,
incredible.
There's the Virtual Boy controller. It has boobs.
Incredible. I feel like if this was like a real program, we would have, instead of slightly something else in the middle, we'd have a little screen that a producer would be able to just throw images and whatever we're talking about, be able to like reference things.
Oh boy, that sure sounds like something professionals would do.
That's the way of the future.
Tiger Fang, member for 4 months, gives the member chat to say thank you for all the years of entertainment. Well, the 4 months of entertainment. Thanks, Tiger Fang.
Well, maybe they were entertained for years and then finally felt bad and was like, I guess I'll start giving you money.
And Brave Othello, member for 12 months, says, have fun cranking one out, Marty.
Always do.
Who the hell makes a cranking motion when masturbating? Never really understood that euphemism.
I feel like you would like literally rip your dick off.
Yeah.
If you're
doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've got some kind of severe bifurcation going on.
Yeah. Sound off in the comments below.
Moving on. Walker Grant gives $4.99 and says, finally caught one of these live. Thank you, Marty and Yahtzee, for all the great content, especially this amazing podcast.
Thank you, Walker Grant.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thanks back and forth.
So many thanks.
Scavenger gives $10, gives his usual $10, his habitual $10. To say, or her habitual $10, I don't actually know. I learned Nintendo had a controller for people with disabilities in 1989. It's strapped to your chest. You used your mouth to direct the D-pad, blew or inhaled in a tube for buttons. Catch up, Sony and Microsoft.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
I know you can get a sort of head-mounted thing to so you could type with it if you haven't got any hands or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure enough. A hands-free controller.
Interesting. I remember Nintendo Power once published a letter about someone who controlled Nintendo games with their feet because they had like a torn nerve in their hand or something.
Yeah, yeah. That's really neat looking.
Long Dong Silver gives $5 and says, of all the instruments that don't have a game peripheral based on it, which would you guys want to see? Give me an accordion for a poker game. Polka game.
Mm. Well, I'm playing on my Twitch channel. I'm playing through Ocarina of Time right now, and I feel like the Ocarina inputs are very not very intuitive. If granted, I don't think I'd be able to play an actual Ocarina, but it would be Zelda games are so
sort of flute device where you can lift your fingers over the different holes.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would also. I know Nintendo tried to do it with that Wii Music game, but I think being a conductor could be cool. I don't know how to conduct. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It always feels like conduct. I don't want to, like, I feel like I'm going to offend conductors out in the audience, but I don't feel like they're doing anything. They're just waving their hands around. The people who are playing the music, they know what's going on. Like, they've practiced.
You know, they're keeping the rhythm. They're helping every section of the orchestra remember where they come in.
Yeah. It feels to me like, I think the work of a conductor, so much of it is in the lead up to the performance. And it's almost like like a sporting coach, like a basketball coach. Like, I don't know, once the game is starting, I feel like the players are doing all the work there.
I feel like there's a lot of nuance to it, and I feel like there's going to be some people who are in like high school orchestra who are going to be very cross at you.
No, please. Well, listen, I'm saying that the high school orchestra people are the ones doing the work, and it's your teacher who you should mutiny against.
Yeah, I think about that.
Don't mutiny against them.
Think about the concept of an accordion controller. I think that would work for other things as well if you were making a game about molesting someone.
Jesus, what is happening? Why?
I don't know. My first thought was back to that Japanese poke people's buttocks game.
Doki Doki Ass Slapper.
Yeah, just have a big set of controls made to look like a big pair of buttocks, and you just squeeze them back and forth and see how much you can get away with it on public transport. Anyway. Dimitri gives $5 and says, I feel your Life of Eric Tsarn idea for Dev Diary would work well with a music box game for the playdate. Crank speed tied to game mechanics, maybe. Yeah, possibly.
I mean, what was... I don't know. I'm not familiar with Life of Eric Tsarn.
Well, my concept for Life of Eric Tsarn... Do you know... Are you familiar with the short story, The Music of Eric Tsarn?
I'm not, no.
It's a Lovecraft story about a dude who has to hold off horrors during the night by playing his viol.
Okay.
Which I interpreted to mean violin, but apparently a viol is a completely different instrument that's played more like a cello. But whatever, I made a game about a violin player who has to move the bow back and forth across the strings to appease the spirits in the sky in various different ways.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that could work with a crank control. You have to, you have to,
I guess, crank you can almost do it
at specific speeds to appease some kind of cosmic horror.
I feel like you could do like a Five Nights at Freddy's-esque thing with cranking. Like, if you needed to use the crank to like open and close doors. And it added like a bit of tension and horror to the crank.
Slam the portcullis down.
Yeah. I love that word. That's such a good word.
Portcullis?
Yeah, it's incredible.
But where's the starboard cullis? That's my question.
Find out next week. On slightly something else.
Raven Dragoon. Welcome to credit. He didn't give a message, Raven. But welcome to credit anyway.
Welcome. Oh, we have Raven Dragoon right next.
Oh, there they go. Who gave us $5 to say, enjoying Adventure is Nigh. How do I get more Amy in my life? I can't tell what else she does at The Escapist. She does a couple of streams, usually with other people. Yeah.
She does Friday afternoons at 3 p.m. Central. She streamed all of the Halo games alongside Nick. They're about to finish all of their Gears of War streams, and then they're going to be streaming Divinity Original Sin 2. Hmm. And then she usually joins us for game night, Saturday nights at 7 p.m. She's working on some other cool things now that are in the early ideation process. So.
Yeah, it's mainly streams. And Adventures Nigh.
She has a full-time job outside of The Escapist. So
imagine that.
A side gig. Yeah.
Christopher Perez gives $4.99 and says, idea for a crank game. You play as a filmmaker in the early 20th century, cranking at different speeds to control the camera's film speed.
Well, there you go. Christopher, you should learn how to make games for Playdate and make that game and then send it to me because I'd play it.
How easy do they make it to make games for that thing?
No idea. I absolutely do not know.
Maybe if I contacted them and said, hello, my name is Timmy. I would like to make games for your system. Please send me a pack of cool things.
Yeah.
I used to try to game that system. I'd like write a letter pretending to be doing a school project to like a chocolate company and hope they'd send me a load of freebies.
Did it ever work?
No.
Oh, well.
They'd send me information leaflets for my project.
Yeah.
You can't eat them. Ashore 101 gives £5.69 and says, Yahtzee, I hear you do lots of different English accents, but never heard you try a Geordie one. Fancy giving it a gan like, mate. I don't think I could do a Geordie one. Newcastle is the Geordie accent. It's people
called Newcastle. What is Geordie? Like, what is that? Is that just what the accent is called?
Yeah, I don't know why they're called Geordies. But that just refers to people from Newcastle, which is north of England City. And I don't actually think I could remember what the Geordie accent sounds like at the top of my head. Should I just say, Haway the lads?
There you go.
I'll just say, Haway the lads.
Oh my God, there's so much. There's a lot of... I'm now on the Geordie Wikipedia page. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
The Geordie schooner glass was traditionally used to serve Newcastle brown ale.
Oh, there you go. That's why they're called Geordies.
Perfect.
You learn a new thing every day. A new, utterly useless thing.
Exactly.
Gryfar, member for 19 months, gives a member chat saying, going back into weeb shit, what service you recommend? Weeb service?
I'm assuming you mean like for anime, right?
Like Crunchyroll the big one.
Yeah.
Right? I just see.
Yeah, Crunchyroll and Funimation are now like under the same umbrella. So Crunchyroll is going to be the main one. That being said, if you're like just dabbling in it, like Netflix, Hulu, and HBO Max all have like a really good selection of like some new shows, some classics, some good movies. So if you're just like testing the waters, there's a good chance that one of the services you already pay for might have some of them. Once you get serious, Crunchyroll is it.
Because we all pay for some, apparently.
We're all idiots.
So we've established where Geordie came from. Where does Crunchyroll come from?
Well, I know Crunchyroll is the name of is it like deep fried sushi? So it's like a sushi roll. And a crunchy roll is like, I think something with...
It does make me hungry, the name Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
I think of Tootsie Rolls.
I found an Urban Dictionary, and you don't want to look at that one. That was bad.
Okay.
That was bad. Yeah, I believe Crunchyroll is just a type of sushi roll. Tempura says...
that'd be crunchy.
Yeah, this is very crunchy.
Just literally take a sushi roll and deep fry it. Is that how that works?
Yeah, or maybe it's like the fish on it is deep fried. So I don't know if the entire thing is deep fried.
Frying the whole thing doesn't feel like a Japanese thing to do.
No, that feels like a Midwest thing. That sounds like something we would do in Wisconsin.
Or a Scottish thing.
Yeah. Are they like, is Scotland like the...
Oh, yes.
Is notorious. That like the Midwest of the UK?
There's notoriously low vegetable intake amongst the Scottish. There's a cliche attached to the Scottish, that if you go to a Scottish chip shop, they'll deep fry like a Mars bar or a Cadbury cream egg for you, if you ask. Never had a deep fried Cadbury's cream egg, but I kind of want to. Maybe for like the last 5 minutes of my life when I know it won't matter.
Yeah, that's like a good, like a, or if you ever like commit a crime so heinous that you're going to be executed. Yeah.
If I was on my deathbed, I'd say just get all the classic British snack foods, deep fry them and bring them here and just satisfy my curiosity once and for all.
Yeah, serve them a nice little conveyor belt.
Deep fried jammy wagon wheels. Let's try them.
Sure. Love jammy wagon wheels. No idea what that means, but it seems like something that'd be great.
You don't have a fucking clue what a jammy wagon wheel is.
No, it sounds made up.
It's close in spirit to a moon pie.
Okay, I know what a moon
pie
is.
Sort of two biscuits with marshmallow in between covered in chocolate.
Oh, okay. Perfect. That sounds great. Deep fry that? Holy moly.
Yeah, I'd be all over that. I guess the marshmallow might go a bit molten if you deep fried it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they deep fry ice cream. Who knows how that works?
It's by the same principle as the baked Alaska, I believe. Well, it can be like hot and crunchy on the outside, but still frozen in the middle.
But still, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Long Dong Silver gives $5 and says, careful insulting conductors, Marty. You don't want J.K. Simmons from Whiplash after you.
That is one of my all-time favorite movie characters, and I apologize to J.K. Simmons in Whiplash because he is a conductor who would just beat the shit out of me. So
he's a very good actor, that J.K. Simmons.
He's great. He's great. Although, no J.K. there.
You know, when I think of like really good actors, I think of people who can like just sort of completely transform themselves and be a completely different person from role to role. Like someone like Gary Oldman. I've always thought that sort of actor. J.K. Simmons, I would not consider that kind of actor. He's sort of very, very good at being J.K. Simmons.
Yeah. I would say this is the one role where he's very, like, almost like horror movie villain, like comically villainous in this movie.
He can play J. Jonah Jameson or evil J. Jonah Jameson.
That's true. I mean, I guess pretty much, yeah. He's just pretty much bad J. Jonah Jameson in that, yeah. I'm watching this new Apple Plus show called Slow Horses with Gary Oldman about like an MI5 office, and he plays just like the biggest slob who's just like farting all the time and like just like a real piece of shit, and he's great. He's excellent. A+ Gary
Oldman. Thinking about what we just said, and it's weird that we don't think of J. Jonah Jameson as bad J. Jonah Jameson, even though J. Jonah Jameson is always positioned as an antagonist.
Yeah, and if like HR existed at the Daily Bugle, like surely he would be written up. Like he would be outed. There would be like a story on Huffington Post about the awful ship he's running, and he'd be ousted.
I guess he's usually like used as like a comic foil, but there are plenty of villains who always get chumped and are still considered villains.
Yeah, that is true.
Like the Riddler, he's usually used as a joke, but they still think of him as a villain.
It's not in the new Batman movie. He's like a, well, that hardly counts. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say what he is, but it's a spoiler for the new movie. So,
Riddler in name alone, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you subtract all the flamboyance from the character, but wait a minute, that character is flamboyant.
Yeah.
Anyway, Scavenger gives $2 and says, "Google the Death Crimson custom controller." Okay, I'm going to cover your face again in a minute.
Excellent.
Death Crimson controller. There's a whole bunch of different things. I don't know what you want me to look at here, chat.
Is this the gun? There's a gun controller, but then there's this thing that looks like it's like a fucking HR Giger thing that you like stand in.
Oh yeah, I found it. Here, I'll put it in front of your face again.
Please do.
Yeah, is that what we're talking about? It looks
it's terrifying. I don't want to be a part of this at all.
I feel like if you put your hands on it, your hands would never leave it. It would excrete some like kind of hideous glue.
Cronenbergian. I like it.
Nice, helpful place to stand in front of it, I see. Where was I?
Pacific Blue said, "Google the Death Stranding controller. It's just a little fetus." Someone should take the baby controller that we mentioned for that baby mama game for Wii, and put it in a jar and let it be your Death Stranding controller. So you can rock the baby when he gets a little nervous and everything. And yeah, sounds great.
Thanks. I get enough of that in my everyday life.
I guess. There's no game there for you.
And it really does my back in sometimes.
Yeah.
Hot Creamy Fart. Always a joy to see you here, Hot Creamy Fart. Gives us $5 and says, if you can make a feasible crank-controlled game, you might just solve the energy crisis. Which exercise equipment would make for a fun game interface?
Well, it's funny. Dealing with the first part first. that energy crisis thing. Remember, do you remember Folding at Home on the PS3?
Yes, that was going to save the world or something.
Yeah, and it was like while you weren't using your PS3, you could put it in a sort of sleep mode where it was still connected online, and it was doing something with data. It was like ultimately like using your PS3 to
it was compile or the human genome or something.
Yeah. And the whole idea was if everyone who has a PS3 allows their consoles to do this, it could get whatever this thing was done faster.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like we saved the world.
It was like Bitcoin mining for science.
Yeah. It was like altruistic Bitcoin mining.
Well, how very nice.
Yeah. Which exercise equipment would you...
Well, they've kind of done most of them. Arcade, they've got, like, exercise bikes you ride to do the motorcycle games and shit.
Yeah, and I think the, like, Peloton stuff has already, like, gamified it a little bit. Yeah. I think, like, a lot of gyms kind of gamify stuff. Like, that's even the point of, like, workout apps and stuff is to get you to keep doing it because there is that sense of, like, a, you know, not a carrot on the end of the stick, but, you know, a form of tangible progress as opposed to just bettering yourself.
Yeah, and there was that Ring Fit business.
Yeah.
Well, you could use, like, you know, the abdominal press to make another version of the molesting people in public game I was proposing earlier.
Yeah, why did we bring that up again? I thought we left that behind us.
I like to skate close to the edge. You get a better high there.
Yeah.
The dogmatic director just popped in with $5 right at the end there to say, on the subject of unconventional instrument controllers, give me Hurdy-Gurdy Hero. Hurdy-Gurdy is a crank-based musical instrument, I believe.
Oh, I only know Hurdy-Gurdy from the song, The Hurdy-Gurdy Man. I didn't know that was an instrument.
Well, he's called The Hurdy-Gurdy Man because he plays a hurdy-gurdy.
Incredible. I never knew that. Oh, look at this little thing. It's like a violin that just like... went to Europe and decided to really change its identity. It's great.
Yes. I think the dude who does Down the Rabbit Hole on YouTube has a video about the hurdy-gurdy because he's a big hurdy-gurdy fan.
He's a GERD head. Very neat.
Whatever the name is. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's it for Super Chats, I think.
Absolutely.
So let's... Oh, I'm just looking at myself on the webcam. I seem to have shifted down a little bit. My face seems a bit off-center there.
You're just going to slowly slide down by the end of the week.
Well, I have a very comfy couch, as Toffee can attest.
Yeah.
Yes, it was very comfy, and he'd kind of like to go back to it.
Yeah.
Toffee says, thanks for watching Slightly Something Else.
You're welcome, Toffee.
This was Yatsukoso on this side of the screen. And other side. And over there was Marty Sleaver.
Thank you so much for having me and for covering me up a few times and for making me uncomfortable with your game ideas. It was wonderful.
I do love to issue discomfort. As Toffee can attest.
Absolutely.
Remember to keep watching all week for more content on The Escapist. What's on today?
We are donezo today. This is all we have today. However,
in Iceland, I think.
Everyone is still in Iceland until the end of the week, but you can check out Darren's new In the Frame dropped on YouTube for everyone, and it's on sort of the current state of Star Trek. It's very good. I'm not a big Star Trek fan, but I thought it was wonderful. And Darren's video essays are excellent.
I want to hear about the current state of Star Trek. It would probably depress me.
It would probably just make you sad. Tomorrow, Casey and Jesse will be back at the normal time for Hidden Gems. They're going to be playing a game called Streets of Rogue. I don't know what it is.
I know
just requested
that one.
The art. Oh,
it's sort of like a 2D, where they were trying to do roguelike immersive sim.
Oh, interesting. I assumed it was going to be a roguelike Streets of Rage brawler.
Well, you're wrong, you idiot.
I am. I was tricked.
You'd better watch that stream and find out.
Apparently. Wednesday, of course, will be
Zero Punctuation Day.
Can you give people a tidbit on what you're doing?
Well, speaking of Rogue, I will be discussing Rogue Legacy 2.
Rogue Legacy.
And of course, doing the usual post-CP stream of the game from 1 p.m. Pacific time. On Thursday, I have a new episode of Extra Punctuation hitting YouTube for members.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else will have to wait till next week.
Yep.
Bunch of cheapskates.
All you poors.
Yes,
we should have the... what were you going to say?
You'll like this week's Extra Punctuation. It is on the subject of the Persona series.
I've heard of them. I love that series. Incredible.
I know you
Incredible
do.
Series. Yeah.
Do you? Really? You bring it up so infrequently.
I know. I'm very easy to predict. And then we'll have breakout normal time Wednesday morning. We'll have Casey and I will be finishing the first Metal Gear Solid, hopefully in theory on Thursday, and then Friday.
So are you gonna go through the rest of those?
We're gonna go through 1, 2, and 3. We've committed to.
Okay.
So that's kind of after 3, it kind of like loses rails a little bit and goes off the rails, and 4 is much more watching than playing, and 5 is just big, like that's
too long.
Yeah, I think
the whole Metal Gear season would be like 3 times as long if you were doing all the games after 3.
Yeah, and especially if you did Peace Walker and all that. So yeah, we're just going to do 1, 2, and 3. And then Friday, in theory, Nick's going to be back, and so him and Amy will be back for Gears, but no promises. It's possible Nick will be jet-lagged.
I'm just bobbing Toffee's head back and forth along the bottom of my webcam.
Daw. Daw.
He is literally the most tolerant dog in the world.
I'm gonna see he how puts much up with all of your nonsense.
Yeah, let's see how much you'll let me get away with.
Yeah.
No, he's loving this.
Oh, perfect.
Look at that tongue coming in and out.
Aww.
Yum, yum, yum. Oh.
Oh, what was that noise? Oh,
he's starting to feel it. He's starting to say he's had enough. Well, now he looks too cozy. He's going to expect me to do this all day.
It'd be really funny if someone clicked on this video, having never watched it before, and thinking that they were going to see people talking about video game controllers, and then they come into you torturing your dog, and your dog making a noise like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Instead, they would see a very happy, lovely dog and go, I should watch this more often so that I could enjoy this very happy, lovely dog.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess I'll say goodbye then.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much for watching, for donating, for hanging out. You were wonderful.
Toffee's running away. Bye.
Bye, all.